Blog Talk Radio.
With Apple Capital Group. Today we have this topic. Maybe it's not a popular topic, but it's more of a human interest topic. Like one person said, we have someone in our family or someone that's connected to us who's been convicted of a crime, who has served time. But now we're going to talk about, in this episode, how to integrate this person back into society. Do we just leave them out there, which is not an option? But what can we do as a community or as a family to help this person along and to become a productive person in society? And pretty much this is going to be the topic today. Right now I have Nikita on the phone, and I'm going to let her talk about her program and talk about her background and go from there. Well, welcome to the show, Nikita.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for having me today.
Great, thank you. I guess we begin with your background. Talk about, I know you have several, you have your consulting job right now, a company you started, but kind of tell us about yourself and your background and the jobs you held with the state, and then we bring ourselves forward.
Okay, great. Excellent. Thank you. I'm Nikia Franklin. I have a company, SA Appointed Time Consulting, also incorporated Focus Talk, as well as Parole Assist to bring it to a head. This organization was started as a result of me experiencing various things as a parole officer. I was a parole officer for 5 years in DCJ. After the five-year term, I was promoted very quickly to a senior district parole officer. I work in the pre-revocation task unit department. I was a general parole officer. I worked in a district resource center position as a parole officer as well, which is basically providing resources and making sure the offenders that needed a little more attention on a weekly basis was given the necessary tools and resources they needed in order to successfully reintegrate themselves into society. And after that five-year stint of time, I was promoted into the hearing officer position for the Board of Pardons and Paroles, also called an administrative judge, which is normally what they would call us. What we did was listen to the offenders, the parole officers, any witnesses, if there was any victims involved or if there was an adjustment witness or someone who just wanted to come in and speak on the offender's behalf, to let the parole board and the hearing officer in particular know how the offender was doing while they were out in society before their alleged violation of their release. I was, being the administrative judge, listened to everything everyone had to say, summarized it up in a report, took in recommendations from the parole officer if a recommendation was needed, required, or a recommendation was desired to be put forth. Submit a report after I completed everything, summarize it, submitted it to the board with a recommendation myself as to whether or not the offender who was alleged of violating a rule or condition of his release needed to be returned to TDCJ ID under parole violation, or if they should be continued on supervision and say, hey, there was no finding. There was not a substantial enough evidence. There was not a preponderance level of evidence based on the stipulations of the parole board to send a person back to TDC or send them to the intermediate sanction facility, which is basically an opportunity for them to go sit down for a while, say, hey, you didn't do a good thing. You were out there clowning around. Think about what you did. We'll let you out in 60 days, 180 days, or whatever the time frame is on that offender's judgment from the Board of Pardons and Paroles. Wow. And that's what I did. outside of being a corrections officer for approximately 3 years before working with the parole division. Been doing junior police explorer from 12 years old. So I've been in criminal justice almost all my life, dealing with offenders and having family members and different individuals. I attend St. John's United Methodist Church downtown on Crawford and Grape under Pastor Rudy and Juanita Rasmus. And our community there as a whole has individuals who has ex-drug addictions or maybe going through experiences now, maybe on parole, ex-offenders, people with felony or misdemeanor backgrounds are all around us every day, and everyone needs an opportunity.
Wow, that's good information. I know in the future we're going to have a person from the district attorney office going to be on the show, and also we're going to have a criminal defense attorney tomorrow, and he's going to talk about the defense portion of that.
Okay.
And doing a little information, I was talking to, I think, one offender. I couldn't get him to come on the program because he said he might have to ask permission. But anyway, he was telling us his journey from his conviction. And he was in, I think, Harris County. Went through Harris County system, went through TDC, diagnostic, and they assigned him to a prison from there. After a few weeks, he went to his prison form, and from his prison form, he stayed a year, and all of a sudden, well, not pretty much all of a sudden, part of his plan, he got paroled, originally sent to a halfway house. I'll make sure I have this correct. And from the halfway house, then they, once his family did their home, the parole officer did their home visit, he was placed on the monitor, and from the monitor, they placed him, you know, with his family, and that's where he lived. He just had to maintain a job and so forth. Is that pretty much how the system normally works on your end when you start to pick up as a parole officer? What in that scenario that you actually enter the picture, is it several parole officers before you, or you get them from the point they are coming out of Huntsville, and from Huntsville, then they come across your desk to report to you when they get out?
Okay. All right. You're speaking of if I'm in the position of a parole officer now. Okay. Well, when I get the offender has submitted a parole plan in the institution to an institutional parole officer. The parole officer gets two or three addresses for a potential home residential plan. They send it out to the parole office based on the zip code that the offender would be living in.
Okay.
So I go out and I investigate that home plan and determine whether or not it's a viable home plan, whether or not an individual, it's an actual physical building. Someone who is the head of household has to give me permission and say, hey, yes, you know, such and such can live there. And I approve it, or they'll say, no, he can't live here, or I don't know who he is, don't want anything to do with him. I'll deny it. I submit the report back to the proper individuals. They get it back to the offender, and the offender is then notified whom it is he would be residing with and where. From there, once the offender is released, we get a list that's generated. It should reflect all of the individuals that should be released and reporting to our office that day. So within 24 hours from the time that person is released from the institutional division, they have to be on the front doorstep of whatever parole office they're assigned to.
Okay. So I need to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so you're saying that before they get out, they actually submit a parole plan themselves, or someone help them do that? Or parole plan pretty much is what they say, hey, this is my family who I'm going to live with. Can you elaborate what type of parole plan they you know?
It's wherever the offender feels like he wants to live. If he's been corresponding with some family members and they say, hey, you know, Joe, you can come live with us until you get yourself on your feet, then, you know, come live with us, give them our address when you're ready to submit your plan. Or if mom says, honey, you know, you always have a home here and this is your homestead, the offender already has an address that he can provide. Or if the, you know, all ties have been severed and he's just, you know, burnt all of his bridges out in society in the free world, he doesn't have anywhere to go. So he may have to say, I need a halfway house to live at. Otherwise, I'm going to be living on the street. Well, they're not going to release you to live on the street. They're going to release you to that halfway house. So whether it's one in Houston, one in Cleveland, one in Baytown, wherever it is in within the state of Texas that they have approved halfway houses, they will submit a plan for you to go there, make sure there's a bed for you, and when if it's not one, when one becomes available, they'll send you there. It don't matter where you live originally, they're going to put you wherever the bed is.
Okay, I follow. Okay, so that kind of makes sense. So this happens if a person was paroled, and parole does mean they didn't complete a sentence. Is that what parole means?
Yes. Okay. A person was convicted and given 100 years, which is life, basically.
Okay.
And they serve so many years of their sentence, and it all depends on the year and the month you were convicted. The new fiscal year for the state starts August 31st. It ends, and it starts September 1st. That's the new fiscal year until August 31st again. So whatever laws have been imposed or had been under effect from September 1st to August 31st of the next year, those are the laws that you will be sentenced under, and those were the laws that you will continue to abide by once you're released. So you may have to spend a fourth of your time, half of your time, or depending on what your individual crime is that you have committed would determine how much time you have to spend on parole within the institution. And then if you still have time left once you come up for parole for evaluation, if you're eligible, then you'll have opportunity to get out at that time.
Okay, I follow. So also I was reading that with that in particular law, they might say, okay, if you we're going to give you 20 years, you have to serve a fourth of that time. I'm reading through this. It's not only the physical time from day to day that they're to serve, but also they will receive good time credit, education credit, or whatever other type of credit to add up to, say, for example, they had to serve a fourth of that time. So when all those credits come together, if I'm correct, and then that marks their eligibility, is that, I'm reading that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
That's a part of it. And I don't know the full contents and stipulations that they have as board members to do the calculations, because a person can come up for parole five or six times and be set off, whether it was a behavior issue, whether the board had something else pressing to deal with. It may have been any number of things. That's on a different spectrum.
Okay.
So it's not a black and white.
Okay. And this parole board is made of people within the community, and decided there, it's decided in Austin pretty much, different panels of different boards.
Yes.
Okay.
And they are spread out throughout the state of Texas. They have districts that they cover.
Okay. Does, one other question here I'm seeing, writing a letter to parole board, is that going to make a difference in helping the person get released early?
I will say this. If a victim wrote up letters to the parole board,
wow,
and said, I'm in fear of my life, I have nightmares every night, and it's been 10 years. This person traumatized me. I'm in therapy. I'm dealing with a number of health conditions as a result of my experience with this individual that you anticipate releasing back into society. And I don't think that would be in the best interest of both for myself as well as the public. Do you think that would have an impact on the board's decision?
Oh, wow.
So, therefore, that lets you know it's very important that if you feel that you can have someone supporting you, or you can support yourself in writing a letter to the board. It's not, it may or may not have equal weight, but it's putting something on the table.
Okay. So even if the victim doesn't write, but if a person from their family or friends or their church step in, like the church you belong in, and say, hey, we know this person. This person made a horrible mistake, and it depends on what the offense is, of course, you know. Does the board take that in consideration as well?
Absolutely. I think the board takes into consideration as much information as possible.
Okay.
Because you don't want to make a frivolous mistake. If you have the support of your church, your community, your family, is very important to have family support, because it shows that when you get out, you have something to step into and a group of individuals that will support you and give you that direction, because it's going to be difficult when you get out.
I follow. And you mentioned earlier, real quick, about alleged convicted, but they are, like Sergeant Jones said, once you're convicted, and that's it. That's the end of it. So they're not alleged in the sense they really are convicted felons, and from that, that's what they branded as.
Correct. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
But as far as the aspect of a hearing officer is concerned, if you come up for an alleged violation, the parole division says he fails to report.
Okay.
That's a new violation. It's not. It has nothing to do with why you're on parole, with your convicted, your sentence.
Okay.
It has something to do with a new violation that someone is accusing you of doing. You beat up your girlfriend because she found out that you had five other girlfriends on the side that she didn't know about. So
okay.
She called the parole office and said, "Oh, he hit me, and I have this little bruise on my arm, or so I don't have any injuries, but he did hit me for real." So now you are accused of violating a rule or condition of your release, and at that point, you know, they're going to issue a warrant immediately, and you're
okay.
going to, you know, be in custody.
Okay. And so you have a hearing, and then they kind of judge what the I'm going to make sure, as being the hearing judge, you have a hearing, and from that, you make your recommendation on to the board what to do. That's what I'm hearing?
Right.
Okay.
They can bring in the victim, the alleged victim, the
mm-hmm.
girlfriend. They can subpoena various witnesses, whether it's, you know, my mom, I was at home, my mom, I didn't do that, or whatever the situation may have been. If you have your check stub and your time card to say, you know, hearing officer, I was at work, you know, during this time frame that she alleged that I did this. It's impossible. You know, you have to be able to present significant evidence to say I didn't do it, but you have to be willing to speak up for yourself, because no one else is going to do it for you. The parole officer is going to present evidence against you. You have to submit evidence on your own behalf. The witnesses, you don't know if she's going to come in there and recant and say, oh, no, I was just upset. He really didn't hit me. We have to assess that.
These things really happen? I mean, I'm sure that, yeah, you do have your the girlfriend, the wife say he hit me because they're mad at you. Do you find that in the case of that particular incident of maybe the domestic abuse that these facts are end up being true, or are they just saying that just to hurt them or get back at them or go back and recant the story?
That is a question that is very different.
Okay.
And it's a sensitive question in the fact that anyone who hears this will say, well, no, he really did hit me.
Okay.
And then you have individuals who are going to say, well, no, I really did. I was just mad at him. So I called his parole officer, and I knew that would get him arrested, but I didn't think that they were going to keep him that long, and I didn't know that he was going to lose his job, and I didn't know that they were going to put him out of his apartment. I didn't know that he was going to lose his vehicle. I didn't know that his family was going to turn his back on him. I didn't know that now I'm no longer going to be allowed to come to his family's residence because I have broken a bond and broken a commitment and broken a relationship up because I lied. He really didn't hit me. He didn't curse me out. He didn't do anything. In actuality, he really just walked away. And I got mad, and I threw something and hit him. And instead of him hitting me back, he turned around and just left. And I was mad because he didn't fight me back. I was mad because he didn't do anything. He just left. And I don't know where he went.
Wow.
You have a number of scenarios. But the thing about it is you have to be neutral and detached as an administrative judge, a hearing officer,
mm-hmm.
and make a decision based on the credibility of each participant, the relevancy of the information, and you want the mere facts. You have to get down deep and dig, turn over all the stones, and if you have to continue the hearing in order to get the adequate persons present in order to make a sound judgment and recommendation to give to the board and make sure the board has all the facts they need in order to make a decision, that's what you have to do.
Okay, great. Now, this applies to really any state. It just don't have to deal with Texas. New York, Georgia, Mississippi, Chicago have the same type of scenario, parole. Maybe it varies a little differently, but this is still going to be the same procedure. They still don't have parole. They're still going to have these violations that can occur with a person and so forth. So they're going to be pretty much universal here in the state.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Okay. I guess always just tell the truth and look at what the circumstance is going to be at the very end. In these halfway house scenarios, or what is a halfway house? Is it a house that people just in the neighborhood, a resident lease the house out to the state, or what is a halfway house by definition?
A halfway house, and I want to take it back just briefly to the young man who was released to the halfway house on the electronic monitor before he was allowed to go to his family's residence.
Okay.
That can be a stipulation by the board because of it depends on what his classification is inside the institution before he gets out. He may be required to live inside of a halfway house for 24 hours or for 3 months or however before he's allowed to live in general society and still be on the monitor. So it just depends on what the stipulations are and the conditions are imposed on the offender by the board before he's released and it's on his certificate. But moving back forward to your question regarding what is a halfway house, a halfway house can be any number of things. It can be an apartment complex that was renovated and now is considered a halfway house or, i.e., transitional location, transitional home. So where you go there, you stay there for a duration of time, whether it's imposed by the board or not, until you get yourself back on your feet and move out of that type of environment and then get your own place or live with a family member or whomever. Or it can be a facility such as the Ben Reed facility, and majority of everyone in Houston, Harris County, and surrounding areas or probably throughout Texas know of the Ben Reed Halfway House. It is not it's a gated community with not portable buildings, but tin-like buildings, some brick buildings, and they're housed in a dorm. So it's almost like a jail outside of a jail, and you have your furloughs where you can leave and go report to your parole officer, or your parole officer is assigned to come to that facility, and you're not allowed to leave the facility. Or you have it's a lot that goes on with Ben Reed, but they expect you to be able to submit a home plan and eventually get out of that facility because they need room for other people who are coming out. And then you do have people who rent out houses and renovate houses to where you can possibly have two or three people per room. And they provide you a bed, have a kitchen, and it's an actual house or apartment complex.
Wow.
And the only difference is you share it with between 6 and 12 or 14 other people. It depends on the size and how many people they can get in a room. And they may have a contract with the state in order to have people housed there, or else you can come there independently and rent it out.
Wow. That is awesome. For you business owners who have houses they're trying to get rid of, maybe that's an option for you to contact the state and trying to rent out your house. See that?
Absolutely. It is an option.
I have something to tell my boss now. Okay, so in this halfway house, for example, I know you may have a non-violent offender, and you have a violent offender, and you have a sex offender. Mm-hmm. Is that pretty much the three categories that normally the parole board would look at? Okay, non-offender, okay, non-violent offender, rather. Then you have the you know, who embezzlement, theft, or whatever. Then you have the violent offender who robbed somebody, who murdered or whatever, assaulted someone. Then you have a sex offender. Is it mainly is those three categories they take in consideration if they're going to have they're going to go into a halfway house?
I would say yes, and I would say no, because you have to look at each individual's case.
Okay.
No two people are the same, and that's just like with my organization. We don't look at you as a group. We look at you as an individual, because each individual has individual needs.
I follow? Okay. Wow. I'm going to talk about jobs in a few minutes and some other things I think your company provide. Going back to that family in the halfway house scenario, part of that parolee's plan, do you have, you know, mom is always going to be welcoming to their child. Do you see some families just really turning their back? Hey, yeah, I can take a murderer. I can take a person who steals. But then it becomes an issue if they have any children in that household, if the person being convicted of a sex crime.
Are you thinking of a person that's returning back to their own residence?
Returning back to their own residence, or returning to a residence that's in a plan. For example, if there was a – just going towards a sex offender, because that, I mean, you really can't – you can talk about the other things a lot easier, but just trying to bring in this particular scenario.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a sex offender who was convicted for molesting a child or whatever under 18 years old, do they normally look at, with the system, being a parole officer, will they put that person back in the same household or put them in the household with children? Does that make sense?
No, they will not. And as a sex offender, they are required to abide by certain conditions. Majority of them are required to continue to register even after they complete parole. They're not allowed to be within 200 or 500 feet of a school, a playground, a park, anywhere that children congregate. You have sex offenders that unfortunately live in apartment complexes with their family.
Mm-hmm.
And that apartment complex is full of children, but they falsify information oftentimes more than not and say, I live at my Aunt Sue's house, who stays in the country or 5 miles in a row on this farmland, and you know, no one else lives there. But then you have this person who's actually living in an apartment complex with all these children and around these people, and they're innocent kids that are not aware of what this person is has in his or her history, because it could be females as well that are classified as sex offenders.
Okay.
So there are stipulations, there are requirements, and it goes back to what the board imposes on that offender, because they know that individual's individual case.
Okay, I follow.
They're not allowed, no.
Okay, so they won't go back. But in a scenario, you look at, okay, I'm going to do a home visit before this person gets out to approve his plan. I know it's an apartment complex. This is no way in an apartment complex you're not going to have any children.
Right.
In that particular scenario, say, hey, you can't go here, or say you're just going to have to go to a halfway house because this is not an option, because it is an apartment complex. We know that it's not an adult complex anymore. You know, used to, in one time part, in the past, you had all adults, then you have family. Most of them today are all family for the past 20 years. You don't have that type of scenario. But taking in that account, if you look at, hey, this is an apartment complex, it's not going to work. So there's no use to me going out there.
Right.
The apartment number, I can look on Google, and you can see it's this nice family place. So that's automatically turned down. Hey, you got to go to your next option.
Right, exactly. And the parole officer is, by the policy, the way the policy used to be, when I was there, you were required to go out and physically verify that there's a building there that is an apartment complex and speak with someone at that residence or location. That's what the policy used to be. I don't know what it is now, but I'm sure it really hasn't strayed that far from that, if it has changed at all. And then you basically deny the plan without an issue, no big deal. You deny it, period, because you don't want that on you.
I follow. And that would be the same case when it comes to child abuse, or child abuse is treated a little bit differently?
I'm sure they're actually treated a little bit differently, because they may have abused one group of children or one child. Normally that is a family-oriented crime. So that person would not be allowed to have contact with their child or whoever the victim is. They would not be allowed to be within a certain amount of distance if that's a part of the conditions. They are not allowed to contact that child or that child's family member. And it all depends on that individual case, because it could have been, you know, a one-on-one situation and where the child was in sole custody of the father or sole custody of the mother, and there were no one else that the child could be released to, and was unfortunately placed into the CPS custody and placed into the system after that. So 9 times out of 10, the child would never have any contact with that person anyway.
Okay. What is the role of a parole officer, technically?
Technically, we as parole officers, me being an ex parole officer, your responsibility is to help an offender successfully reintegrate back into society, guide them, evaluate them, allow them to set goals and attain those goals. But then you oftentimes, you know, may or may not have situations where you're in the best position to be able to do that, for a better sense of saying it. You do assessments on the offenders. You make sure that they're in compliance with all of their rules and conditions that the board set. You make sure they do everything they're supposed to do within a particular timeline set by the board or as agreed between you and that said offender, because you want to help them. You're not there to hinder them. You're not there to not conduct their home visits. You're not there to not to encourage them to pay their fees, or you do random drug tests on them. You know, you make sure that they're doing the things that they need to do to make it in this new age of and way of doing things.
Okay. Wow. So will you say a parole officer is a parolee's friend?
No.
Or the community watch keeper, or the board, or a combination of both, or a counselor?
A parole officer has a hat of many. A parole officer is the watchdog of the Board of Pardons and Parole.
I follow. Okay.
The parole officer is the counselor, because you're going to hear the issues, concerns of the family, of the victims, of the offender, and the sponsors, mentors, employers, everyone is going to come to that parole officer and lay all their tears on that parole officer's shoulders, and they're going to have to figure out a way to decipher things, break it down, and help everyone who's trying to help this offender. And those that are not trying to help that offender, cut those ties and move on. A parole officer is technically not your friend.
Okay.
But your parole officer is supposed to be a support system that helps you and guides you and recommends things to you, because no one can make you do anything. It's what you choose to do. It's what you desire to do. It's what you have made up in your mind that you are ready to commit to for the betterment of yourself first and everyone else, including society and those surrounding you, after.
Okay. Wow. So, again, you're the watchdog, but also I guess that I'm not sure how long the parole officer would stay. If a person who have maybe 5 years of parole, I doubt seriously they're going to be with that one person for 5 years.
It's possible.
It's possible? Okay.
Yes. It depends on the longevity of the parole officer.
Okay, I follow.
Yeah,
if they're in the same job, hey, I'm the parole officer for this moment, but I have opportunity to rise and I get my cases to somebody else so I get transferred and so forth.
Exactly. That's how those things happen with me. You have your offenders for however long on your caseload. If you get promoted or you transfer to a different office or your office relocates or whatever the situation may be, you may more than likely, depend on the situation, keep that same said offender. However, if you get a promotion or there's other things that's going on or you transfer into a different department, no, you won't. Your caseload will be transferred to someone else.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's better if you keep the same parole officer because they're familiar with you. You develop some type of relationship with your parole officer and an understanding and you know, it's easier that way because it's consistency.
Okay. And with that consistency, if something comes up for like a, I think you mentioned earlier regarding the violation, at least you have someone kind of neutral, know a little about yourself. Hey, you've been with me the last 5 years, and I don't know what type of violations a person would normally have besides, I think you mentioned earlier, reporting, or if someone come and accuse them to do something, or I'm assuming if they get a new conviction, I mean, a new alleged crime or something they do. What other type of violations?
You have nine rules on the back of your parole certificate that you're required to comply with. In addition to those nine rules, you have your special conditions that are assigned specifically to you by the board that you're also required to comply with. Then you have to comply with all the laws of the state and the county and city and federal government that everyone else who has never been on parole or probation has to comply with it as well. So it can be anything. It can be failure to report as instructed. It can be association with persons of disreputable or harmful character, basically hanging out with some other offenders and or some gang members, and you're not supposed to do that. It could be leaving the state of Texas without prior written permission from your supervising parole officer and or the Board of Pardons and Paroles. And that's a condition that everyone is required to abide by, and the only time you're able to just freely do that is if you have a work permit and everything is verified. It could be, a new crime. It could be not attending your substance abuse classes as you're required to, or taking anger management or completing those classes within a required amount of time. It could be not paying your parole fees. And you have a $200 balance, $500 balance of your parole fees that you failed to pay. Or you have been on parole, you were released, did what you had to do, had a violation, went back to the TDC, came back out again, used to pay $10 a month, now you pay $18 a month, and you still won't pay your parole fees. So those parole fees are going to carry over with you, and you will still have a violation for failing to pay parole fees, not just the current parole fees of $18, but they will incorporate that $10, that balance that you had, they'll incorporate it all.
Oh, they want their money.
They want their money. And the parole officers look forward to you paying.
For real? Oh, so they don't have to report it. There's another issue to have to deal with the file. That's
exactly.
The case?
And those parole fees is $8 for your, no, $10 for your general parole fees that everyone across the board is required to pay, and it goes into a fund. And then you have the $8, which is an additional fee that goes the Crime Victims Fund, so it's CVF fund.
Okay.
And then your general parole fee fund. And then if you are a sex offender or you have restitution, then you have those fees and monies that are required to be paid as well, which is separate and in addition to the $18 or the $10 that you may be required to pay.
Okay. So in essence, even with the fees, the state does use it for just mainly to offset some of the costs involved in handling that case?
I'm not 100% sure, but I would say the fees are used for various things. I just don't know exactly.
Or make them a little bit responsible, and also if you have a job, you shouldn't have a problem paying the fee.
Yeah, but you have people that have $100 pair of Jordans or $200 pair of Jordans and the latest gold teeth and the latest jewelry bling bling, as they call it, and you have a wad of money in your pocket and you have a brand new car and you've just been out for 3 months or 3 weeks or 2 days and you owe $200 or you owe $15 or $18 in your parole fees and you still just won't pay it. You can pay your parole fees off for the whole time that you're scheduled to be on parole, and that's one less thing that you have to worry about. Drop them a check.
Well, so what is their excuse they saying and why they're not paying the fees?
I don't have no money. I don't have no job. My mama didn't give me the money. She on a fixed income. My girlfriend, she on her way with the money order. I had to pay child support. I just don't have it. I'm going to bring it back next week.
Next week never comes.
It never comes.
Wow.
You're going to have gas in your car to get you where you have to go, right? You're going to have the bus fare, right?
Got to have bus fare.
You're going to go to the club.
There you go. I mean, you have to have bus fare, you have to have gas in order to get to your monthly meetings, huh?
That's right. You have it depends. Some of the meetings will require you to pay.
Okay. Wow. But I see it in one sense that it's kind of showing them some responsibility as well. Maybe it's a minimum fee. Last couple of questions we'll talk about is job opportunities, maybe tax breaks for business if you know any, and also we can talk about what's the difference between probation and parole. Then we can go start talking about, I think, all the services you can offer. So let's take like a one-minute breather real quick and listen to a piano solo for a minute, and then come back and we can talk about job opportunities and talk about the difference between probation and parole. And we'll talk about your company and then how we can successfully get someone to complete parole successfully. That makes sense.
Okay.
Give you a 2 minute break. So I'm going to play a song, Blue Skies. We'll be back in 1 minute and 56 seconds. You can call in at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460, or you can go ahead and log into the chat and ask a question. Nikia, you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Mainly, we know the economy today. With the job market in particular, do you see any issues within the last couple of years? You know, is it really hard to get an offender? Or, well, is an offender, that's what they call now? Offender?
an ex-offender.
Ex-offender.
Parolee or ex-offender.
I'll try to use one of your terms you used earlier.
Oh.
What's the job market is for them? Is it really hard for them to find a job, or they, you guys normally provide a list for companies to for they for them to go to, or training classes they can go for free or whatever to get skills up? I can see on the employee end there are some tax benefits for you hiring one and so forth. Can you talk about the job market for them?
Yes. Now, are you speaking of on the as for my company aspect of things, or just in general?
In general, then we're going to come back to some of your services after we talk about parole and probation.
Okay, absolutely. The job market is very difficult, is very volatile at this time, and it's not just for individuals that have a felony or misdemeanor in their background. It's difficult for the corporate person who's been working in the corporate industry for the past 20 or 30 years or 5 or 10 years, and whether they've ever had any type of criminal history or not. Is this really not at its best right now? Nevertheless, it depends on what type of employment you're looking for. If you walk out of the institution and think that you're fixing to go get $100,000 a year, think again. You might have to start from the bottom. You might have to go push baskets at a grocery store. You might have to go clean some toilets. You might have to work at Jack in the Box, Burger King, McDonald's, or Taco Bell. It just depends. You might be able to work in the mailroom of a corporate industry and work your way up. It depends on what your goals, dreams, and aspirations are. You may be able to find work with a construction company. You may be able to find work with door-to-door sales. Sales is always an industry that a person can go into whether you have experience or not, but you want to try to go in with some type of skill set and experience in order to be competitive with the other individuals that have those experiences in order to give yourself a fair chance. You're going to get a lot of no's out there in the industry right now, but you have to just hang on until you can get that one yes that you need.
Okay, great. So it's all about skill. Now, four things came up real quick, maybe some opportunities as a skill. I talked to several companies, and they said, if I have a person who does air conditioning venting or, you know, heating and venting, I don't think what they call the HVAC.
AC and heating.
Yeah.
Epic.
An electrician, plumbers, we always in short supply of those. So if a person can get that skill of a plumber or electrician, AC tech, I mean, they always need those. And they can – even some companies will help them go through the training because, you know, if I bring a new person on in the very beginning, we get them the lighter jobs. But we have a lot of small jobs that we even would pay for the training. So maybe there's an opportunity if someone wants to just reach out to those type of industries, they can do that as well. It just made some of the clients that we have with Alpha Capital. Also, believe it or not, the military will bring someone on, and they said they have to get a waiver. If a sex offender, you can forget it.
Right.
But child abuse, you can forget it because they're kind of moral. But if it's a person who have a non-aggravated crime, you know, they can do a waiver from that. And also, I think one of the commanders mentioned for military, if it's an aggravated crime, it depends exactly what it is and what the circumstances. But what happened is you can go to a recruiter as long as you meet the age and physical education requirements on that job, you know, for that entrance exam, you're pretty much okay.
Is there a particular branch? Because I know some branches it used to be where you couldn't have any negative history. So is there a particular branch?
Yeah, I'm just talk to a couple of people real quick. I know Army, definitely. Marines, but Marines do have an age limit. The military, I think the Army will go up to a person who's 42 years old, but they have to be off of parole in order for that to happen. So they did mention that, yes, they have to be off of parole because they can't have any obligation to the state. But the easiest is the Navy, the Army, definitely. As long as you, again, he said, if you meet the age requirements, you meet the physical requirements, you pass your ASVAB, the higher the score you have on ASVAB is the better. So I would say get the book. The minimum is like 30. But if you score in the 50s or above, that makes it a lot easier for they can get the commander to give a waiver. So they will give you a waiver for that. Okay. And then just ask. I mean, if one recruiter say no, ask another recruiter. And, again, they have the quota they have to meet. And, you know, eventually you'll get there. But you have to be off of supervision. Sales, like you mentioned, was another opportunity. And also another person mentioned, you know, you can – I think the state will allow – you'd be on parole and go to school, but you can do work study. Is that the same case of having a job?
I mean, a job is a job, but okay. You have to look into being able to get financial aid, and the work study is associated with financial aid.
Okay.
There are some people that may not be able to receive it if you have certain convictions, and I believe drug convictions is one of them. But there's a counselor that I'm familiar with that you can get in contact with that is at the Houston Community College that you can get in contact with in order to find out exactly what those requirements are. And then you should be able to look online and look at FAFSA as well and contact them to determine the eligibility.
Okay, and the school did say regarding the Dallas Community College, obviously, they say the only thing that we have restriction on is really a drug felony, but the others they should be able to come in on, and they can be assigned to work study as well. But they do background checks as well now.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, don't go there if you have a sex conviction or something like that. So that is an opportunity. Last question I have before I should go talk about your company and wrap things up with how to get a person to do it successfully. What is the difference between parole and probation?
Okay, great question. A lot of people ask this question, and it's just not something that's widely known. Probation is a decision that is handed down by a judge at trial that they will sentence you to instead of going inside of an institution, going to spend time in jail or doing some jail time and community time. They will just leave you in the community for that conviction for a specific time frame under the supervision of a probation officer. Just like you have a parole officer, you have a probation officer. And you're required to report and do the various things that is set in your particular stipulation. And depending on the circumstances and the seriousness of the crime, the judge can specify restrictions on the activities of the offender during that probationary period. And if the offender violates the conditions or rules of his or her probation, he or her may be sentenced to imprisonment by the judge, and that is known as revoking the probation or revocation of the probation.
Okay.
With parole, you have been sentenced and convicted and you're inside of an institution and you actually went to do some time, or there's a thing called PIA, parole in absentia, which is you don't physically go into a penal institution, but they do like a revolving door and give you a TDCJ ID number because the jails may be crowded or there's any number of reasons. And you get an early release on your sentence from the institutional aspect, and you're required to serve the rest of that sentence outside in society. And the inmate is allowed to return to the community under the conditions of parole and the supervision of a parole supervisor, a parole officer, being also called a parole agent. And the violation of those conditions can result in revocation of the parole and re-imprisonment for the offender. And the decision to grant parole is the responsibility of the parole commission. So that's the difference.
Okay, I follow. Okay, I read something in the past on the Houston Chronicle offer article regarding boot camp. Is that still an option, part of that process, and you go to parole from that, or that's a probation type thing? It didn't clarify.
I think boot camp would be more of a probationary function. I've never heard of parole having anyone go through boot camp and then come, because that's a deterrent. They're basically trying to keep you from getting locked up and going into TDC.
Okay, I follow. Okay, great. Let's talk about your company. And you were part of the Goldman Sachs or the American Express program. you got into a similar program to that. I think we talked about last week.
The Texas Business?
Yeah, Texas Business.
And the Women's Business Enterprise Alliance. Mm-hmm. Yes. I started the initial company of At That Point in Time Consulting in November of 2009. And basically starting this company to give back to offenders and allowing them to have the knowledge, the tools, the resources that they need in order to understand the parole process and being on parole and being effective with their conditions and their rules imposed by the board, and so they can successfully complete their programs and conditions without reoffending and being sent back to TDC within a year or 2 years or 3 or 5 years. At That Point in Time, services would include providing suggestions on addressing matters regarding the expectations of being on parole and successfully completing their supervision. It would recommend ways to work professionally with the parole officer, how to correctly address conflicts and to have an understanding of the policies of the board and the parole division. At That Point in Time, would give suggestions on how to protect the interests of the offender as well as the community and society. Provide guidance, resources towards completing the conditions of release within guidelines successfully. At That Point in Time, would suggest and recommend ways to prepare for and complete an administrative hearing for a desired outcome. Provide referrals to reputable individuals, attorneys, organizations based on the needs and assessments, all while confronting their past in order to fulfill their purpose in life. It's not solely just a resource for individuals with a criminal history, but it's also for individuals who desire help with taking steps to meet their goals. At That Point in Time, it's based on the belief that the customer's needs are of the utmost importance, and the entire team is committed to meeting those needs. And as a result, a higher percentage of our business will be from customer referrals, and we desire the opportunity to earn the trust and deliver the best service in the industry. We're not attorneys. We do not provide legal advice. However, we can refer individuals to the necessary person that can do those services for us. With Focus Talk, Focus Talk is an online community that is being established that was created November 20th of 2011. So this particular program is going, as I said, is going to be an online community that provides support, mentorship, and resources to children and ex-offenders and their families. This program will be a membership-based program to provide exclusive and focused material needed to become successful, responsible, and positive, focus-driven citizens. We have a network of individuals that has had prior criminal histories and understand the hardships of being released from a criminal or penal institution into a society and rejected because of their past. Yet we're able to stand strong. They were able to stand strong, to benefit, to break down the barriers and become a part of society, transform themselves against all odds and become a part of the elite, productive, successful, and communities and societies as we know them today. And our leaders today, we want them to continue to become examples and mentors for those of tomorrow as figures of hope. With our third section of At That Point in Time, it's called Parole Assist, which brings everything to a whole in a nutshell. It's like our baby. Parole Assist is a single source, one-stop shop focused on assisting individuals released from the penal institution on parole, supervision for duration of time until their sentence is complete. Parole Assist has leadership with direct first-hand knowledge and experience as a parole officer, pre-revocation task unit officer, also known as PRTU, and hearing officer for the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles Division. With the skill sets and intellectual property possessed, and understanding of the parole system and how to effectively complete parole, remain in compliance, and avoid the pitfalls, Parole Assist was created. We can help those who genuinely desire their freedom and can provide the guidance, direction, resources, and support necessary to reintegrate into society without reoffending, which would further increase the rate of recidivism. Parole Assist is that one-stop shop for all concerns upon release to freedom, need assistance with their parole hearings, with an understanding of the conditions, understanding of the parole rules, whatever it is that they need. Parole Assist is here when it comes to that aspect of things. The information provided by parole assist will be invaluable, and it has increased their chances for success on parole and off parole once they complete their sentence. Because the skills that they gain, the relationships and the bonds that they connect with and they grab hold to while they go through the programs in the various entities of ATATC at the point of time consulting, is information and resources that they can take with them and use for a lifetime. We will always be there, always be around, and they can come back to us if they need some assistance or questions or getting a little frustrated or flustered. But we're there for them, and we focus on the individual and the individual needs, and we do assessments, and we look at goals, and we journal. So it's not a quick fix. It's not for a program for individuals who really do not desire to make a difference in their lives and is not ready to do the right things and change behaviors and change mindsets. We're here for them for the long haul.
Right. Now, with this last section, the consulting, you can normally, if an offender needs a person to consult with, they can hire your company to come in to help them with their revocation hearing?
Correct.
Okay. And do they really need an attorney, or really is an attorney really necessary on this? How is that really based on?
That is based on the individual situation and circumstances, and that is a personal decision of the client. Because we can guide you and we can give you the necessary tools and information needed to be successful in conducting yourself in a parole revocation hearing. We'll let you know what tools and resources you need, but you have to be willing to be honest and open with the situation at the same time. And if it's a situation that we cannot provide you complete services on, we have attorneys that we can refer you to that will be open and honest with addressing the situations with you and let you know your chances and, you know, hopefully will not charge you an arm and a leg. We can't control everything, but the referral base of attorneys that I associate with will definitely be reasonable in price in assisting you.
Okay. And with the hearing itself, when you talk about honest, I mean, I know clients will always not tell the whole facts of the story. Can't say that, you know, they always lying or may leave out the material facts that's really needed in order to make a decision. So in that particular case, you just ask them one-on-one, hey, just tell me what the story is. Tell me what's wrong so we know what we are faced with. Any surprises I need to know ahead of time, tell me everything. You know, are you held by the same confidentiality?
Yes. Absolutely. None of your information will be disclosed. There is a confidentiality clause. All of your information that is submitted or provided to ATATC, Focus Talk, or Parole Assist will be confidential, and there is forms and documentation that you would have to complete and sign in order to establish a contract and know that whatever we discuss, unless it's in writing and approved for us to release it to particular persons or parties, with the exception of certain things, we are, you know, required and bound to keep your information confidential. Yes, it's important for you to tell us everything. Understandably, there are going to be people that will not be honest to save their own lives, basically. Nevertheless, with the experience and the long-term exposure of being working within the system and dealing with offenders on a regular basis, and you kind of, and having that right discernment, you have the ability, for the most part, to identify those kinks, those flaws, those areas that a person is not being wholehearted and truly honest. And then you have a knack for having the ability to ask the right questions, get the right answers, or interview the proper persons in order to say, hey, you know, we needed this information, and had you presented this information, then this could have been the outcome versus you holding things back and then you're not getting what you would hope out of the experience. And trust me, there are situations where if you fail to report and, you know, that's not a revocation type of offense, but if you are habitual in it, and you just don't want to act right, then there's nothing anybody can do. But we can help you put on a great presentation, but you still have to be willing to comply. You have to be willing to change your behavior and your mindset.
Okay, but you're going to have to pay your fees, and you're going to have to show up for your monthly or quarterly meetings. So
right.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not here to replace your parole officer. We're not here to replace parole. We're not here to help you beat the system. We're not here to support you and be that that advocate for you if you're not willing to do your part, because the contract can end. We're not here for that.
Okay, great. So if a company come out, I mean, if a family want to come out to hire you, you're normally available to be hired. And also, if they hire you, you normally go to the offender. If they're in jail, I think you mentioned they would be in custody at that when they get to that point.
Well, sometimes the offender, they have parole hearings where the person is not in custody, but they come report to the jail for the parole hearing. And if a finding is made, the offender is arrested at that time. If a finding is not made or a continuance is held, the offender is allowed to leave and come back for the next setting or leave and you know, whatever the final decision is by the board, they'll be notified by their parole officer at that time, and they may or may not be arrested depending on what the board's decision is. But we will come out and have a one-on-one with you, and if the offender's already in jail and if it's a necessity for us to go to where that offender is, then we don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Well, what's the time frame normally of this whole scenario? If they have just scheduled a hearing, and by the time they get a parole decision or a hearing back, or the offender is in custody, if they're in custody, how long that scenario plays out? Does that make sense?
Yes, but I could say 30 days, I could say 45 days.
Wow.
Because the warrant can be issued and the person can abscond it for months or years. And it depends on when the warrant has actually been executed. From the moment the warrant is executed, which means the moment the offender has been arrested on that violation and detained, then the clock starts ticking. But the parole division can issue a warrant every day. But if all you have is warrant and then you don't have people in custody, then the time on the clock can't start running.
Okay, I follow. So the clock starts when they're in custody.
Correct.
Okay, great. And that can be over a 45-day period. Is it a limit? Hey, we have to get this done within 60 days, or we have to, once they're in custody, or they have to get this done in 6 months?
No, it would be more than likely 45 to 60 days. It depends on the situation. Sometimes they have continuance or preliminary hearing that goes to a revocation hearing, which extends the time. And there's a required amount of time that you're giving. You're required to have been given notice of the allegation and the evidence that's being presented against you, and time for you to prepare. But if you're in custody, then and you have an attorney or whoever it is on the outside that's preparing, assisting you with preparing for your hearing, that's what you have to do. It's recommended. A lot of offenders waive their rights to hearing, and we're asking that the offenders be very careful with waiving their rights during a parole hearing, because when you waive your rights, you don't have the right to see everything that is going to be submitted to that board, because everyone don't submit everything to the offender when they go see them. You don't have the right to speak on your own behalf. You don't have a right to have witnesses come and testify in the adjustment phase of your hearing to say how you've been doing since you've been on parole.
Okay.
You don't have a voice. What's
so
being submitted is the documentation against you. And in all probability, you'll be revoked unless the board says, hey, open this up, send them to a revocation hearing, and let's hear what they have to say. That's not all the time.
I can imagine why anybody would give up their right of doing that.
They do it every day. People tell you what they think you want to hear or what you want to hear, and you waive your rights without knowing.
what you're risking. And some people just really don't care. Some people just rather go back to CDC because society has just changed so much and all the roads are one way downtown and it used to be two ways and the bus lines are different than they used to be. And now we have cell phones, tablets, and PDAs and all this cloud technology. And they get scared. And
they don't want to go.
Right, so you have a senator who says, hey, you know, I really want to go back to TDC. Can you just let the board know I did everything they're accusing me of doing plus some other stuff, and I really need to go back, else I won't survive out here. You have that too. I've
okay.
heard it personally.
Oh, okay, wow. So you know, they went in when the beepers, before the beepers, and now they have cell phones, and
yeah,
they just don't want to deal with that. Ah, forget it. I don't want to
talk. You have the touchscreen phones versus those big block phones with the suitcase that you used to have and throw over your shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now it's something totally different.
And oh, wow.
They're not up to date with technology all the time.
And they don't want to deal with
the there.
Wow. Okay, so just to kind of complete this real quick, so when they have a hearing, don't waive your hearing. Get someone that can advise you, like your company, hey, these are your rights. This is what you're going to be faced with. This is what you need to do. You need to do this dog and pony show, get your witnesses in order, get your letters in order, and put the best case you can in front of the board to make sure that you are shown in the best light as possible in order to keep from getting revoked.
Absolutely.
Okay. And your company provides that, and if it's more in-depth, then you recommend to some attorneys that can kind of help with the case as well. But other than that, if it's not a really overly complicated case, what would be a complicated case that you really going to need to have an attorney to get involved with this?
A complicated case is where you have pending charges and the preliminary aspect of it, you know, we can handle that, but we would consult with an attorney if necessary, depending on the circumstances surrounding the situation. So if there's a conviction, I mean, hey, if you got a new conviction, we can help you out.
Yeah, okay.
But we, you know, if you choose to have an attorney, then that will be a personal decision. Failing to report, failing to pay your fees, any of those non-rules, for the most part, we can help you with any of that, including those extra extended conditions that you have that are imposed specifically on you. We can help you out with that. The going in and addressing those allegations that you still have an open pending charge and you're still going to court on it, and the board decides to go ahead and proceed, and the potential for you being revoked on that, even though you have not been convicted in the court of law, is kind of high because the preponderance level for the Board of Pardons and Paroles is far different from the preponderance level in the judicial system.
Okay.
So it's much lower. So you can be revoked with parole and be found not guilty with the court of law because the level of preponderance is different. And at that time, you would have to ask for a reopening. So those things like that, we would actually we'll address what we can, and then the rest we would refer you to an attorney.
Okay. So in the case of a person having a pending case, and the case could, you know, take a whole year to get resolved, and it depends on what the circumstances are of it, I'm sure that you're going to need an attorney because you're not going to want to say this to the state, because in essence you're saying something to the state that is trying to convict you. You shouldn't, in that case, maybe you probably will need an attorney, if that's what I'm hearing.
Right. Because
okay.
there's certain things, that, I mean, because that's a lot of the legal stuff that okay. we choose not to get into because we're not attorneys and we will not be held accountable or liable for something that we have no right and jurisdiction in addressing.
Okay, so with the state itself, I mean, I know that you said that you need very little. It's really their personal decision if they want to revoke you. Does that really happen when you have a case that's really pending, and if you revoke somebody, you can put them in and, you know, you're in Harris County or Houston, you can be revoked and you can be sent to Abilene or Lubbock. And how does that play in the part of that person who has a case in Houston? You know, then they had to put send a warrant to bring that person back
here? They won't be transported. They would still remain in Harris County, but their parole would be revoked, but they would still remain in that county that the charge is pending in. And even if a person that's from Harris County received they were accused of committing a crime in a different county, that person would stay in that county. The parole hearing officer, parole officer, will go to that county if there's not one there, address those allegations. The board will make a decision, and a person will stay there until that case has been adjudicated. And then, you know, if they are convicted, then they'll do their time wherever it is that that judge sentenced them to go. If they're revoked on parole and then they're found not guilty and they're remanded in custody because they were revoked on parole, then parole board would send them to DDC or wherever it is they would go from there, and then they would have to address their allegations as a conviction if the offender requests their hearing be reopened based on new evidence and information. And there's three or four criteria that allows an offender's case to be reopened, and it's on that parole packet. So it's very imperative that when you get your packet back that has the board's decision on there, that you look at it, the hearing officer's report with the decision. You look at it, and you look at the front and the back so you can identify those little requirements that will make the major difference in whether or not you stay in TDC or whether or not you have an opportunity to have your case reopened and reheard based on new evidence.
Okay. Well, the last double advocate question is, when I start, I think one thing you mentioned, I'm not sure, regarding child support, when you had this particular case, since that, have you run into some revocations because of dealing with child support issues, or that? Let me make sure I was reading another comment regarding they've been arrested for not paying or have a large payment for their child support, and because of child support, now they're in custody in jail. Is that considered a new offense?
If they fail to pay their child support and the child support division issued a warrant for their arrest after the date of their release, you have to look at the parole certificate.
Okay,
you need to know the date the person was released on parole.
Okay.
Once they identify that date, if you receive a new offense or charges from that date forward until your discharge date, you are held accountable by the parole board, by the parole division, to address those allegations against you. And yes, you can be arrested because of that warrant from the child support division. But if the warrant was issued prior to, and the offense occurred prior to your release on this current parole certificate, no, they cannot arrest you. They can't issue a warrant based on that. And you just need to make sure that if that is the case, that the parole division is fully aware that this was a warrant that was issued prior to you being released on parole, because they handle it in a different manner.
Okay, so I'm looking at her question here. She said that, okay, he got arrested regarding child support, and the parole, I guess the county notified parole to let them know that they are arrested.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. So then that's up to the parole officer to see if they want to do a revocation hearing, that notification, or that's automatically set for. Is it with the parole officer decides that, or is automatically a violation?
I'm trying to understand you. Okay, she's saying that an offender was arrested. The
offender
county that he was arrested in notified the parole division that this young man was in custody, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. The second part of the question is what I'm...
Okay. It's up to the question is it up to the parole officer... since he's arrested, is that considered as a revocation?
Is he automatically revoked? Is that
not automatically revoked, but does that prompt, since they went to the parole officer and notified the parole board, does the parole board come down with, say, hey, we need to come with a revocation of this, or schedule a revocation hearing, or is it up to the parole officer?
Well, what the parole officer does, as soon as the parole officer is notified, the parole officer should get with the arresting agency and find out what the charges are.
Okay.
And get an offense report. They'll get an offense report. They'll find out what the charges are, the court date. They'll determine when the warrant was issued versus when the warrant was executed, because
okay.
that goes back to the parole certificate situation. You need to know what was the date the warrant was issued, because that will force the parole officer to make a decision based on that information. They'll,
okay.
they'll do the warrant, request the warrant, and then they'll send it up to the board with a recommendation, continue supervision until pending charges have been adjudicated, or just continue supervision. This is just a notice that the offender was arrested on discharge, but it predates his release date, or this is a new charge, and, you know, we need to request a parole warrant.
Okay, great. Last couple of things, just to recap, I know we went a little bit over, but however, with the before we get to the final end, talking about how to get a person successfully through parole, anything you would like to add on to this, this conversation, before we get to the final stage of how we can get an offender successfully through parole, and anything you want to add to it before we get to that point about your company?
Well, I understand that our company is a new company, and it's a fresh out of the box startup company, and what we are trying to do is cater to the offender's individual needs. We want to be that resource that a person will go to and say, you know what, we were confident in our decision of going to, at the appointed time, consulting, parole assist, and focus talk, and becoming a part of that family and that membership in order to get the best resources that we need, not just for ourselves, but for our family and for our community, so we can rebuild and give people second chances and third chances and the 15th chance, because this person or these persons that we associate ourselves with truly, honestly, genuinely want to do the right thing. They're tired of being arrested. They're tired of going in and out the institution. They're missing out on opportunities. Lives, families are growing. Children are growing up without their parents or without their dads or their moms or aunts or uncles. And they need to come home and reestablish relationships. They need to come home and they need to feel as though they are important individuals, that someone is supporting them. Someone is looking out for their best interests, just as much as the best interests of society. They need to know that there's a place that they can go in order to find resources, to try to find that decent job that they would like to have. We want to be that single source resource center. We want to be able to assist them with locating housing, adequate housing, providing them with clothing or resources in order for them to look good and feel their best, in order for them to go out and find that job and get that job interview so they can be able to be a new homeowner based on their own cognizance. We want to be able to provide them with mentors and sponsors and allow them to complete the rules and conditions of their release and provide them with that support system that they need and be able to vouch for them, because they were genuine, they were honest people that got out, made a difference, and did the right thing, and now they're able to give back and continue that positive cycle on and remove the negativity out of the experience. We want them to be able to comply with their rules and conditions of their release by completing classes successfully and getting things done on a goal. When you establish goals and set time frames for yourself in order for you to be a better person and say, you know what, I have something to get up for tomorrow morning. I have a reason to open my eyes up and feel positive and feel good about myself. We want to provide them with that outlet in order for them to get an education and get that skill set needed in order for them to become that electrician, that plumber, that AC and heater HVAC technician, to be able to go in the military if they choose to be able to work or own their own business and become entrepreneurs and start up companies where they can give back. We want to be that online directory where they can go to a place and feel comfortable and have a membership and say, hey, you know what, I can go on and get this resource, not just for myself, but I can get a resource for someone else and connect them to the program so they can be able to benefit as well. we want to provide them with honest staff and honest people and honest resources and potential partnerships that would help them and guide them and mold them into the people that they choose to be. We want them to know that in order for them to be successful in all that they do and be whoever it is that they are destined to be in this life, that they have to want it for themselves. They have to be genuine. They have to be ready. We're not here to give them an excuse, a scapegoat. We're here to give them that support, that hands-on that they need in order to meet the challenges and meet the challenges out there in society. There were 71 surveys that I did at St. John's United Methodist Church on November 20th, 2011, with the 54-hour Startup Houston weekend. And that survey showed that 94% of the people out there felt that there was a real need. They felt that they needed a service that would be specific to the individual needs, not just you go here for this need here, you go here for that resource there, but we want to be able to provide it all. It was 58% of the people stated that they were able to locate services that were willing to help them, but not help them all in one place. You think it's difficult for an individual to come out and get a job? It's very difficult if you don't have the resources and tools and skill sets necessary in order to be successful. Everyone needs a helping hand. Prison is difficult, but being out in society is even more of a challenge. There are clear needs for services to assist parolees. Prison Assist offers a program desired as a single source, one-stop shop. And it is just it's imperative that you have the support of not just friends and family and the community, but you're able to support yourself. Everyone needs a helping hand. And we're looking for individuals. We're looking for people that have been through experiences and has been able to successfully reintegrate themselves back into society and understand what it takes so they can become mentors and give back. They can become leaders of our tomorrow. We can't do it without their help. I can't do it alone. I can't do it because I can't tell you exactly what you experienced inside the institution because I've never been on parole or probation. I've only worked within the system. So it's so important that we be able to provide you with everything that you need and do it correctly, the right way, whether it takes you 6 months or 6 years. Parole Assist, Focus Talk, and at the appointed time consulting is going to be, we're applying for it to be a nonprofit organization, and we want to be that source for you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate it. One other guest in here says, well, also, my husband couldn't find a job, so he learned how to do tile at Home Depot. And kept practicing so good enough. Now he runs his own tile business on the from home, out of his truck. And this is Texas. Tile is cheap. And he's doing something on his own. Also, he said a friend jumped on board and started the painting business. So I guess if you really can't find a job yourself, I guess on your own, I guess. Start your
become
own.
Become an entrepreneur. I mean, we fully support that. Absolutely. I totally agree. And those people are now employers who can hire other people who've been there.
Yeah, that's why I was really surprised you said he's been doing the tile for the whole past year, and he grossed over $100,000. Wow.
Wow, excellent.
And
that's how you make your meal.
There you go. So I guess once you just show your bank account, I guess, to the parole officer, I guess you have a job. And also, you say just start off a painting business with a friend of yours as well. So it seemed like this is a mission for you. It's not just a job or something like that, or it's more of a mission ministry that you compel to do. And I really appreciate your time, you coming out to talk with us. We went way over 30 minutes, which is no big deal. But I'm sure this is going to be a benefit to a family or a member in the family or individual themselves, that it's not over. You can pull yourself by the bootstraps and You have opportunities we just mentioned you can do yourself, and if you can't go fit in the military, if you can't go do this or do that, maybe start a tile business, start a paint business, and just start off slowly out of your home to have something. Make sure you pay your parole fees or pay your probation fees or pay this fee, and be able to contribute back to society. I appreciate it, Nikita, you coming on today. Again, how can they reach you?
Yes, I definitely want to put that in there. I can be reached at 713-598-3740. Again, that number would be 713-598-3740. I can also be reached at P.O. Box 1411. That would be Fresno, F-R-E-S-N-O, comma, that's Fort Bend County, Texas, 77545-1411 for snail mail, and that is at the appointed time consulting. It's spelled just like it sounds, at the appointed time consulting. You can also list it as Focus Talk or Parole Assist. The email address is at the appointed time consulting, the number one, at gmail.com. And I also have a website that is in works. It's https://www.attheappointedtime.com. ATTHEAPPOINTEDTIME.com. So again, I can be reached by email. And if you go to the website, feel free to look through it, sign in on the guest book. You can put in your information on the Contact Us page, and I will get that information, and we will get in contact with you within 24 to, I'll say 72 hours, depends on how much correspondence I have to respond back to in any given day. And again, it's Nakia, N-A-K-I-A, Franklin, F-R-A-N-K-L-I-N. I'm the CEO and founder of At the Appointed Time Consulting, Parole Assist, and Focus Talk. Thank you very much.
Great. And also, do you have a Facebook and a Twitter account yet?
I don't have Twitter yet. I'm trying to get there. I do have Facebook.
Okay, you got Facebook, Twitter, and
yes.
You have a website, so you're pretty much good to go.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and again, thank you for coming onto the program today. I have all your contact information. I will put you on the homepage for this link for Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, Ms. Franklin.
I'm also, on LinkedIn for anyone and business professionals that want to contact me. I am on LinkedIn as well. Feel free to contact me in any of those ways in order to correspond. Look forward to it.
Great. I really appreciate your time again. Thank you for joining the program today. Again, to close out, anything else you might mention, how can we successfully get a person through this particular system? Just need to be employed, any other thing?
I'm sorry, what was the last word you said?
Anything else you want to add to trying to get your loved one, a family member to finish this program successfully?
Well, everyone needs support. Everyone needs to be believed in. If you don't have someone, even if you can't believe in yourself enough to move on and move past the no's, because I keep saying the no's because it's going to be a lot of no's. It's going to be a lot of hard times. But you need someone to believe in you. If you can't believe in yourself, do it for someone else. Do it for God. Do it for Christ. Depend on your religion. Do it for that higher being in your life. You have to be willing to reach out. You have to be willing to be honest with people, be honest with yourself about what your goals are, your dreams, your aspirations. Take a journal and write some things out. Just start talking to yourself, feel writing your journal about where you've been, where you plan on going. How did you get to where you are today? you need a support system. If you have no one else, you have to be that support system for yourself until you can find someone who's willing to believe in you.
Thank you so much. I will again put the information on the website, and if anybody have any questions, please reach out to Nakia Franklin at your website again?
At theappointedtime.com.
Great. I will leave it at that. Thank you again for joining us on the program, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.